Welcome to the Tag Sustainability Talk Podcast, where we bring you insightful conversations and deep dives into the world of sustainable living. On this show, we'll be chatting with a variety of guests to explore the latest in sustainability topics. Plus, we'll be revisiting some of the most intriguing panel discussions from the Tag Smart Communities and Sustainability Society, and getting even more in depth with the incredible panelists. So grab your headphones and join us on this journey towards a greener, smarter future. We can't wait to share these conversations with you. Hey there, everyone, and welcome back to the Tag Sustainability Talk Podcast. Today, we've got a really interesting conversation for you with Joey Alexander from Line Vision. Joey shares some of his journey growing up in a small town in Georgia and going to Georgia Tech, all the way to his current role at Line Vision, a company that's making huge strides in optimizing our electric grid. We'll dive into how Line Vision is tackling the challenges of load growth, especially with the rise of AI data centers, and how their innovative technology is making the transmission grid smarter and more efficient. Plus, Joey will give us a peek into their exciting partnership with Georgia Power and what's on the horizon for grid intelligence. It's a fascinating look at how we're powering our future, so stick around, you won't want to miss it. Before we get started, there are a few acronyms that I wanted to define that are used throughout the episode. First is GETS, this is Grid Enhancing Technologies, DLR, Dynamic Line Ratings, CFD, Computational Fluid Dynamics, and FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. All right, with those out of the way, let's dive into the show. Today, we're here with Joey Alexander from Line Vision. And Joey, can you introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe how you ended up where you are at Line Vision now?
Sure, I would love to. And first off, thank you guys for inviting me in. Good to finally meet you guys and being here talking about something that I think is really interesting for everybody out there because we're all electric consumers. But I got my start in life in Georgia, so a little town called LaGrange. Yeah, started out there and went to Georgia Tech, got a chemical engineering degree there, and started my career also at kind of a local in local industry, which was textiles and chemicals. So I worked for Milliken.
Oh, yeah.
If you guys are familiar with Milliken. So I spent a few years there starting in manufacturing, and I was in manufacturing long enough to realize that that's not exactly what I wanted to do in life, but it was a very formative experience at the same time. So after that, I went into more technical fields in R&D. So moved up to South Carolina for a bit, designed some cool things with fabrics and chemicals. And and then I started looking into other fields. So I really wanted to get into the energy industry. And I found out that there was a company near Atlanta called Exide Technologies.
Okay.
And they were in an expansion phase. And this was during the period of time when start-stop batteries had gotten really big and they were expecting huge demand for start-stop batteries. So that organization was beefing up their R&D department, and I was a part of that.
Okay, very cool.
So I got to spend quite a few many years in energy storage.
Okay. And I'm assuming that is based around your chemical background?
Yeah, there you go. So, a battery is an electrochemical component,
yep,
right?
Absolutely.
So you kind of have both there. So for a chemical engineer, it's actually just the right spot to be.
Yeah.
And I've always been a little bit nerdy when it comes to electrical things. I've always had some, just real curiosity with electricity. And so, after my time at Exide, I decided to go more directly into the electric utility industry. I was already somewhat involved with Exide because we did do storage for electric utilities,
gotcha.
Right? So I had some idea about what went on in that field.
You had exposure.
Yeah, yeah. And so I went over to Landis and Gear, and their headquarters is in Alpharetta, right? So
yes.
not too far away. And I worked there for several years focusing on grid analytics. These are really software solutions that help utilities operate their distribution grids more efficiently.
So this is on kind of the smart grid type of
exactly.
Technology. Okay, gotcha.
Exactly. Yeah, smart grid technology. Yeah, that's where I was at for a few years, and then I got to a point in my life, and I'm like, well, I've worked for relatively large companies for my entire career, and I've always, I've had friends that have been in startups and been in growth stage companies, and
sure.
It always looks like so much fun. And and so I took that dive. So I started with a startup company in the grid enhancing technology space back in 2017, 2018. And that was focusing on dynamic line rating.
Gotcha.
Right. And then I moved over to Line Vision about 2 years ago. And, you know, they offer a very similar but differentiated technology. And they're a US-based company. So I had the desire. What I learned about the electric utility industry is that there's a fair amount of favoritism towards, you know, US companies.
Interesting. Okay.
Especially in the transmission field. You know, the utilities have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
If, you know, you lose power to 100,000 customers, that's a huge deal.
Yes.
Not it's a huge deal.
Something you'll hear about.
A huge deal to those people and those businesses. It's also a big loss of revenue for the utility.
That makes sense.
So utilities manage risk to a higher degree than you would see in a lot of other industries.
It's interesting. As a consumer, you don't think about that, but I can totally see.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you've got to always be up. You've always got to be prepared.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, going for a US-based company that really is serving the transmission grid, and the transmission grid is even more risk averse because it's more critical, right? It serves more customers than the distribution grid. And so, you know, positioning myself a little bit better to serve, US utilities now, and that's where I'm at. And, you know, I really have learned to love this startup growth stage, area.
Very cool.
I like to do things that have never been done before, and that's usually a place where you can get those things done.
Tell us about Line Vision and what kind of problems is the company trying to solve?
Yeah. And I think just as a precursor to that,
sure,
you have to think about the grid, right? Because there's different parts of the grid. And we have a special focus in one of those areas. But, you know, break the grid up into three components.
Okay.
Generation, right? So
power
that's
plants and power plants, all that good stuff. Yeah.
Right. Transmission. So transmission are the power lines you see out there that are really high up in the air.
Okay.
And, you know, they're high voltage and they transmit power over long distances.
Gotcha.
And then you have distribution, which are probably the lines you see out there in your neighborhoods that are on wood poles and they're closer to the ground. That's what gets the electrons to your house and to your local businesses and things like that. So if you think about the three of those things and you think about how smart they are, how much they're monitored, transmission is really the most neglected one. So only about 1% of the transmission grid is actually monitored.
Wow.
Even though it's extremely critical.
Yes.
To all of us, right?
Right.
And there's a lot of ways you can go with that, right? And the opportunity that Line Vision saw there was to begin monitoring the transmission grid so that we can increase capacity.
Okay.
Of the grid. And, you know, since then we've kind of branched out into some adjacent applications, right?
Sure.
Once you have sensors out there in transmission where there are no sensors, gosh, why not do other things there? You know, why not do wildfire detection? Why not, why not help them out with their vegetation management programs and things like that?
Interesting. So, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and these are all things that actually came from our customers. They're like, hey, there's a sensor. What else can you do?
You've got power out there.
Yeah. So, which is a really cool thing when you're not just developing based on what you think is right. Your customers are actually asking for these things.
That's huge.
And, you know, working for a growth stage company, there's a lot more flexibility to accommodate those types of requests.
Yeah, no, I can see
So we got into it and focused in that area for that reason. You know, it's not monitored. There's a big need there. Utilities love to manage risk, and we can help them do that there.
Right.
At the same time, you know, we know that there's a lot of challenges out there on the electric grid, and it's really a prime spot for us to get out there and play and, you know, make that grid smarter, make it more self-aware.
Right.
So, you know, developed, you know, a lot of different functionality with sensors and with software that can be deployed for utilities to help them out along those lines.
Yeah. So it sounds like ultimately, big picture, you've got a platform that I guess you're communicating and you're providing power on the transmission grid. And you're just doing a lot of different things from that particular platform.
Yeah, exactly. It's a single platform that we offer to our customers. It does a variety of different functions. And, you know, one of the ways we position ourselves in comparison to traditional utility assets is that we're much more economical and we're much faster to deploy.
Gotcha. Right?
So we're a faster rate to capacity and a less expensive rate to capacity. So, you know, you have a market need and you have, from a financial perspective, a really strong business case to go in and offer those things up.
Yeah. So, and I'm just curious, just the alternative that you're just mentioning, is that running new lines and just new capacity that way?
Yeah. That depends on the context. So all other things equal, it's more about how do we replace things like reconductoring, which is basically you have a power line, you keep the structures and you put a more higher capacity conductor.
Okay.
And those are kind of like normal iterative upgrades.
Gotcha. Right?
And those, you know, those can cost $500,000 to $1 million a mile to put out there.
Wow. That is a lot more than I would have ever guessed.
Yeah. Now, if you're in the context of rapid load growth, reconductors aren't really enough either, right? So you have to go put up new assets.
Okay.
And that's more on the scale of $5 million per mile because you're putting up structures to support.
Yeah.
You're clearing right-of-ways. You're paying for lots of studies and things like that. So it's a much longer period of time. And the challenge right now is that the load growth that we've probably all heard about, but just to kind of give you a little bit of flavor there, over the next 5 years, we're supposed to have, we're expecting load growth in the 100 to 150 gigawatt level.
And this is really driven by a lot of the AI, the data centers, EV charging and that type of stuff?
Exactly. So just to get a little bit more specific in this state, and as you guys probably know, Georgia is really a prime target for data center organizations like, you know, Meta, AWS, Microsoft, and a lot of the, you know, the third party ones as well, because we have a good situation here for data centers, right?
We're
kind of, you know, we have a really good connection to the internet in Atlanta. we have, you know, a highly skilled, you know, labor pool because we have great universities like Georgia Tech here nearby. And there's also, you know, from a government perspective, there's a lot of incentives to, financial incentives to bring those in. So in Georgia, it's really huge. And if you kind of look at some of the numbers around that, we'll just take Georgia Power, for instance, and, you know, this is public information. So, you know, they file an integrated resource plan every 2 years, unless there's an off-cycle one like there recently was. And normally in their IRPs, they're looking at a load growth of maybe, you know, that can be measured in the hundreds of megawatts per year.
Okay.
100, 200 megawatts per year is what they're used to doing.
Okay.
And, you know, they have existing processes that are predictable where they can kind of get to there at that pace.
Right.
Now you're looking at a load growth over the next 5 years that's about 8 gigawatts.
Wow.
Right? So that's quite a bit more.
Yes.
And so now you're talking about going from hundreds of megawatts to gigawatts a year of growth.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that, right? So in generation and transmission. And so it's a problem I think that Georgia Power likes to have because why not have more, you know, rate paying customers? But, you know, they're really all in right now and trying to figure out how they're going to be able to serve those customers. And, you know, and these types of technologies is one of those solutions. But they're looking at a lot of different things at the same time.
Yeah, I could imagine these major loads present a very different challenge for them as opposed to a neighborhood or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, average residential load is 2.5 kilowatts at peak.
Right.
All right. And, you know, normally a traditional old school non-AI data center might be 50 megawatts, you know, at the high end. And these new hyperscale data centers are hundreds of megawatts for each one. Right. And it's, you know, and it's all concentrated in one area. Right. And so you have to figure out how to get electricity to those customers. And the generation could be 200 miles away.
Right.
So you have to have the infrastructure to get the electrons to them.
Absolutely. And I know that's a big part of attracting these data centers is the promise of easy power setup and just turnkey solution, I guess.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And, you know, utilities, you know, they do, you know, they're customer organizations, and utilities have, you know, customer organizations that really are kind of the salesmen of the utility to their,
sure,
to their big customers. Right?
Sure, sure.
And so they're doing everything they can to make an environment for those customers that will attract them in, right? And make them want to come to the state.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah,
it's really, absolutely, you know, it's a win for all of us in the end.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, definitely. So going back to Line Vision,
mm-hmm,
I'm picturing this device that's on these big transmission towers.
Yeah.
And it's, so you had mentioned before we started recording that you guys have optical as a potential, I guess, part of the platform. And you're, I'm assuming, measuring or observing all of the lines that are on these big giant structures.
Yeah.
And so it's not necessarily like one device per line. You are just taking kind of the entire swath of what it can actually see.
Yes.
Okay. That's a lot of really cool stuff.
It is. And it's giving the utility something like that they never had before is pretty,
right,
powerful. Having some visibility into an area that's critical, but they've never seen.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's dig into that just a little bit.
Yeah.
So what is it that you are providing the power providers with? I'm assuming this is around the capacity of the lines. And
yeah,
so they get a stream of data that just says, yes, you can pump more, less, or what do they see, or whatever you can talk about?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can talk about that. So specifically for dynamic line rating, what they're going to see is a new rating in their EMS system. So their energy
management system. Energy,
yeah. So transmission will have its own energy management system.
Okay.
And in that system, they'll have, you know, today they have all the current ratings in there.
Right.
Those are typically ratings that are relatively static. And, you know, there was an order a few years ago, FERC 881, that required implementation of ambient adjusted ratings.
Okay.
Which is kind of a baby step towards dynamic line rating.
And that's ambient being temperature, just how
temperature,
whatever
adjusted,
the temperature,
yeah,
is, it's going to,
yeah,
affect the conductance of the lines.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so, you know, really what we provide in general with our solutions, you know, with the hardware we put out there and with the software on the back end, you know, with the AI and machine learning, we're really, in general, what we're supplying to them is intelligence on their transmission network. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And one of the use cases there is dynamic line rating.
Gotcha.
It was our first use case.
Okay.
And, you know, the LiDAR unit itself is not calculating ratings, right?
Okay.
There's a whole process that the data has to go through to get to ratings that I can talk about if you like. But at their end, what they're going to see is, you know, every hour they're going to get an update on,
okay,
what the rating of that facility is.
Gotcha.
They're also going to get forecasted capacity ratings 10 days out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Traditionally, DLR providers were kind of capped at 3 days.
Okay.
Because, you know, from a statistics perspective, you know, you're using forecasted weather data.
Right.
Which comes with its own statistics.
Right.
Right. And after you reach 3 days, you know, the confidence intervals in the data aren't all that great.
That makes sense.
You don't have as much confidence in the rating.
Right. Right.
But FERC put out order 881 and told the utilities they had to forecast out 10 days.
Ah,
right.
Interesting.
And so,
okay,
we did augment our system just to provide that so that when we deploy that for our customers, it's compliant with, you know, with that, with that order. In normal operation, they're probably not going to be using a forecast 10 days out, at least in the Southeast.
Gotcha. That
because
makes
we don't operate that way.
Right.
But what they can do, though, is especially in contingency scenarios, which is when something out there goes wrong, right? Or in a planned maintenance scenario where they know it's going to go wrong, but they need to find capacity somewhere else.
Okay.
They can look into the future and they can understand how they can route power to keep the electricity going to the customers.
Gotcha.
So this facility goes down. Oh, look over here. The rating is telling me I can put another 500 amps over there.
Okay.
All right, let's reroute and we'll do it that way. So the technologies, you know, they give the rating information, but then the way that the operators act on that information is in a way that just gives them more flexibility to prevent outages.
That's really cool. So they can take down a chunk of the transmission and just reroute it around. It's I guess not.
It's not as easy as I'm making it sound.
Sure,
but and you know, and many times what that means is that you're pulling from another generation source.
Gotcha.
Right?
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. There's other grid enhancing technologies out there, like power flow control devices that do, you know, kind of active impedance adjustments that can actually, you could have two parallel lines. One goes out, or one for some reason has a lower capacity.
Mm.
You can actually put more power on the other one if you need to.
Okay. Right?
That's a separate technology. But it also is considered a grid enhancing technology.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
And a lot of these technologies can work together synergistically.
So one question I had, and this is just kind of getting your take on things. So we talked about how a lot of the AI data centers, the aging grid, extreme weather, even renewable energy, what in your mind is the biggest driver of the need for the line vision technology, or is it all of the above?
Currently the biggest driver is load growth.
Okay.
Absolutely load growth.
Okay.
So utilities are looking for any way possible that where they can optimize their existing assets to allow more power to go through.
Right.
And the reason why is because, you know, utilities, their profit margins are regulated, right?
Yes.
And their profit margins are based on the amount of capital they invest, right? And that has to get approved by a state commission.
Right.
And so what happens is they may have to go to the commission and say, hey, I need $800 million to upgrade this part of my system so I can serve whoever. That has to get approved, and if it gets approved, that goes into what's called a rate base.
Gotcha.
Right, so now it's a part of that big pot that they can earn, whatever, 9, 10% on.
Gotcha, okay.
And the commission's job is to make sure that all the customers are getting served.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And it's, you know, fair electric rates and that type of thing. And in playing that role, they have, over the past 3 to 4 years, really started to encourage the use of GETs, especially in this context of heavy load growth.
Okay.
Because if you just kind of went crazy and put new lines up everywhere, all of our rates would probably, you know, quadruple.
Yes.
Right? So you have to find a manageable way to do it at a lower cost.
Right.
Using
right.
your existing assets as much as you can.
Especially with those numbers you threw out earlier.
Yeah.
Their per mile numbers are just, I can imagine, even dividing that amongst the ratepayers, it's still... It's a sizable number that if you're running many, many miles of new conductor.
Yeah. Which is just a hunk of metal, by the way. It's
right.
a hunk of metal of no intelligence.
Right. right?
It's crazy to think about it that way. It's such a critical element in our lives.
Right.
And it's just a hunk of metal.
It's just physics playing on it at that point.
With a little bit of maybe wood and concrete, you know, just shaking in there a little bit. But so, you know, a lot of that infrastructure is not intelligent.
Right, right.
We have seen a lot of intelligence added to the distribution part of the network. And that's
sure.
honestly to deal with complexity there.
Right.
There's a lot more complexity in distribution.
Okay.
And we haven't yet seen that come to the same level in transmission.
Mm,
and that's kind of where we're headed. And it's not just line vision.
Sure.
There's tons of growth stage companies out there who have found, you know, new, unique and novel solutions for a whole slew of operational efficiency applications.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I wanted to take it to what actually put you guys on our radar.
Okay.
Was the Georgia Power Partnership.
Oh, sure.
And what can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said before, you know, they're dealing with a massive amount of load growth. They had to have an off-cycle IRP, I believe, in 2024, just because of really more the data center growth piece of it. And across the board, they're looking for technologies that can help them make their existing grid more efficient.
Right.
And so part of what we do is we work with our customers and we look at their transmission network to help them understand where our technology can be most effective.
Okay.
And that's also within the context of where their needs are, right? So they don't necessarily need extra capacity on every line.
Right.
But there are a lot that do need extra capacity.
Okay.
And so that's kind of how we started with Georgia Power, is just kind of, you know, looking at their network and seeing how we could help them out. And we found a lot of opportunities. We were able to prove that we have lots of powerful simulation techniques we can use using, you know, computational fluid dynamics and other physics-based models.
Interesting.
To show them what the technology would have looked like in the past.
Right.
Right. If they had it deployed during that period of time.
Ah, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So you can retrospectively kind of look at things, and that is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So we can use history to help us out in the future, as we commonly do.
Okay.
You know, Joey, I'm curious if you could speak to a little bit about the competitive advantages of Line Vision's solutions versus really the DLR landscape out there. I know you came from this background prior to Line Vision. Really, what makes your product stand out, really, versus the rest?
Right. Yeah. You know, ultimately, all the DLR players have an objective of delivering a line rating into the EMS system, right? So we all have that in common. And that's kind of where the commonality stops, right? So there's a lot of different methodologies out there, a lot of different sensor systems that accomplish, you know, a similar data output. Most of those technologies, number one, are based on sensors that have to be mounted directly onto the conductor itself, okay? And ours is not. And we purposely designed our system to mount on the tower or the structure, as it's commonly called in the industry. You know, this could be a lattice tower. It could be, you know, a steel monopole. There's a variety of different structures out there. But what that allows us to do is offer our solutions to our customers without having to ask them to take an outage to install the sensor, right? Because it's, do you really want to go up there and install a sensor on the line while there's 230,000 volts going through it? You can, and it has been done.
Sure.
But that's scary. And, you know, utilities don't like to do things that are unsafe if they don't have to.
Right.
You know, that's the first piece of it. And also, they have the option to take an outage. But guess what? Outages are expensive. You take an outage, then there's money associated with that. So we designed a product that is easy, fast, and safe to install. But the other advantage is one that's it's obvious, but you probably haven't thought of it. For sensor-based monitoring systems, you're only going to mount a sensor on one phase, right? In electric power, you have three phases,
right?
A, B, and C. And, you know, since we're not on the line, we're on the structure, and our optical sensing is aimed up towards the line, we can see all three phases.
Ah, okay.
Right? Also, if it happens to be a double circuit, which means you have actually two transmission lines, so six phases,
right,
we can see all those phases.
Gotcha.
With the same sensors.
Okay.
That's, you know, those are our two biggest advantages. And I would say there are some other things as well that have to do with the conductor itself creating an adverse operating environment.
Okay.
Right. So those conductors get hot, right?
I can imagine.
Right. So for just a normal ACSR conductor, 230 kV, 150 Celsius is like the maximum operating temperature, somewhere around there. It could be a little lower depending on the utility.
Okay.
A lot of the advanced conductors coming out can go up to 220 Celsius.
Interesting.
Right.
Okay.
So when you mount a sensor on a line, it's also subject to that thermal condition.
Yeah, right.
And electronics just don't hold up.
No, not at those temperatures. Yeah, they get unhappy real quickly.
And if you think about, you know, when you need more capacity, right, and you're going to use it, you're going to have more electrons flowing, which means the lines are going to heat up. So the system's telling you you need more capacity. You execute on that, but you could actually kill the sensor by executing on it because you get the lines too hot.
So one thing I wanted to go back to, and this is just out of sheer curiosity, but how do you power your devices?
Oh, really good question. So the devices don't need a lot of power, actually, but we have either 100-watt or 200-watt solar panel and a lithium-ion battery.
Gotcha.
And, you know, if the sun doesn't shine for a week, we're still okay.
Oh, wow.
The other benefit as well to our system is that if we do have a sensor that goes down, the system doesn't stop running. You're still going to, the utility still gets ratings. And that comes from the fact that the ratings are calculated in a model, a digital twin model.
Oh, very nice.
Physics-based using CFD. And that model is built based on the measurements we take from our sensors.
Gotcha.
Right? So if you think about like a conductor as a thermal system doing a thermal energy balance around that conductor, you're going to have a few different elements that are important. First is the current, right? Okay. So the more current, the more heat generation you have. So that's where the heat's coming from,
right?
And there are maximum temperatures and there's maximum sag. So the hotter the line gets, the more it sags.
Right.
But there's also elements that cool the line down.
Right? Sure.
They're always cooling the line down.
Even such things as the wind blowing.
That's it.
Yeah. Would be a big piece of the puzzle.
Right. So the DOE.
Talk about dynamic.
Yeah. So Idaho National Labs, and this is going back probably 10 years, but Idaho National Lab and the Department of Energy did a really good analysis on the different variables that impact transmission line capacity.
Okay.
And what they found is that for every 1 meter per second increase in perpendicular wind speed.
Okay.
Right? So that's wind speed that is flowing across.
Gotcha.
Right? So if the wind's not flowing across, it's okay. We can still calculate the, you know, the perpendicular component using geometry, right? So what they found is that a 1 meter per second increase in that wind speed increases the capacity by 50%.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is wild.
Yeah.
I was thinking 5%, something.
Well, yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah. All other things equal.
Bleeding that heat off effectively.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you have, you know, you do have other, you know, elements in the energy balance like radiative heating from the sun.
Right. Sure.
Radiative cooling. Right. And then of course the ambient temperature matters because, you know, as my thermodynamics teacher always told me that, you know, delta T is the driving force, right? ambient temperature matters, but the good thing about that is that as long as these transmission lines are actually active, they're going to always be hotter than their environment.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if it's 100 degrees Fahrenheit outside, that conductor's hotter.
Yes.
Unless it's been shut down for some reason.
Gotcha.
And so that's where, you know, from a technical perspective, we're able to, you know, take that technical value and convert it into something that the utilities can use.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Makes sense.
So, Joey, we've talked about really the glass half full here in terms of GET technology, in particular dynamic line rating technology.
Yes.
What potential roadblocks are you seeing or concerned about seeing moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest roadblock that we have is probably just the natural state of technology risk aversion of utilities. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Because they have to protect the electric supply. Anyone can jump up with a technology and say, put this on your grid, right? But they have to be thorough about the way that they, you know, deploy those and scale those to make sure that their, you know, their systems aren't at risk, that their information stays secure. And also that's the first one, just general risk aversion. And then the second one is really more about change management, because this is data that's used in the operating room by the operators, right? And they're used to having a certain way that they operate, right? And so now they're going to be asked to do something differently. And it's not like asking your mailman to drop your mail off on your porch instead of your mailbox. It's a lot more complicated than that, right? So they have a lot of data they look at to make decisions. And I guess it's more on the scale of like an air traffic controller, right? And you don't want to mess that up. So you have to be really deliberate and delicate about how you weave in this new data, these new technologies into their operations. And so, you know, one thing we do is we sit down with them once we get to that phase of operationalizing it, because typically you do a pilot first, it doesn't go into operations. You know, we sit down with them and we plan out, we'll look at their existing rating procedures and we'll look at the types of ratings they're going to get from us. And we start mapping things out and looking at, okay, well, you should probably use a 6-hour forecasted rating in this situation, right? And so we help them kind of frame that up. And then that goes and cooks in the organization for a few months. And then it goes and cooks with their reliability coordinator. And so that takes some time to do. And there's, at this point in time, you know, there's nothing we can really do to speed that piece of it up besides just time, right?
Right.
I think the more systems that we get into operations and the more comfortable we get and the customer gets with developing rating methodologies with this technology, it's going to become easier and easier.
Sure, sure. The more times they can see something implemented successfully, it becomes less of a hurdle you have to clear each time, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, of course, I would love to go extremely, extremely fast.
Right.
Right? But then also, as an energy consumer, I kind of appreciate the fact that they're very delicate and they move at a pace that keeps everyone safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can imagine it's a lot to keep things just at steady state.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, throwing a lot of the renewables, which are not constant. And
yeah. Yeah. I mean, our technology has a pretty strong play in that area as well of, you know,
tell us more,
whether it be, you know, traditional generation or renewable generation interconnection.
Right.
You guys have probably heard of interconnection queues before.
Oh, yes.
You have? Okay, good. Depending on your area in the U.S., those queues are long or maybe really, really long.
Yeah. And just for the listeners, in case you're not familiar, this is basically being able to connect a new generation source to the grid and
yeah.
actually put electrons on. There's a big backlog that it's a nightmare situation and sometimes with these larger loads. So just a point of clarification.
Yeah. So really, basically the utility has to make sure that the lines and the substations have enough capacity to onboard that new generation.
Right, right.
And so that's why it takes so much time. You know, the first thing that has to be done is an interconnection study. And that basically tells you, do we have capacity for
right.
this, right? And if you do, okay, you go in this bucket, right?
Right.
You're going to wait in this line. If we don't have enough capacity, you're going to wait in this line. And so it's a big problem, not just from an environmental standpoint, but also just from, you know, a generation standpoint, because we
sure.
need the generation.
Right, right.
So if you think about the use of these technologies in that application, there's a really good study done by the Brattle Group. It's actually on the Watt Coalition's website. If anyone wanted to download that, just Google Watt Coalition, go to their resources page. But they did a really good study called Unlocking the Queue.
Okay.
And this wasn't just a conceptual study. They actually modeled out in power flow models the impact of different grid enhancing technologies on interconnection. And what they found is that we could double the pace of interconnections.
Wow.
If grid enhancing technologies were used in situations where they can be helpful.
Right.
And it's not for every situation, right? If you need to double your capacity, you're probably going to need a reconductor or a brand new line.
Right.
But if you need 50% more capacity, then we can talk about that and we can analyze your system to see if that's what we can give you.
Gotcha.
Right? If it's not, we'll tell you that.
Right.
You know, we can't give you your 50%. We can only give you 30. But there are plenty of situations out there, whether it be interconnection or whether it could just be as simple as we've gone through our transmission planning process. We've gone through all of our contingency scenarios. And, you know, because of all these new loads, now we have 20 lines that are overloading and in minus one contingencies.
Gotcha. Wow.
Right. And those overloads are typically in 5%, maybe 10%. That's like, that's bread and butter for us.
Gotcha.
We can deliver that pretty easy.
Okay.
And that just improves reliability, but at a lower cost than they would have had to outlay.
So Joey, we talked a little bit about what's coming down the roadmap for Line Vision. And I interpret that a little bit meaning to signify that that's really kind of the vision moving forward for Line Vision. It's not just dynamic line rating. Mm-hmm. It's not just current infrastructure capacity optimization. It's really more of an all-inclusive platform to monitor remotely your infrastructure out in the field where you've never had monitoring capabilities before.
Absolutely. Our head of marketing must have talked to you because
maybe we should talk a little bit about some cross promotional at work.
You're exactly right. So we started out years ago focused on this one application, and we've learned that gosh, you know, we can easily add on more functionality onto the system. And so really our vision is really more about grid intelligence and optimizing grid operations. That's really where we're going. And we'll, you know, we still do dynamic line rating. We're going to do some other things too.
Next year, 5 years down the road.
Yep.
Really more of that, again, all-inclusive platform, all-inclusive get platform, so to speak.
Right.
That sounds exciting to monitor, exciting to watch.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. Like I said, I like to do things that have never been done before, and we're going to have some of those.
So I guess to our listening audience right now, keep your eyes on Line Vision. Keep your eyes on this partnership with Georgia Power. Exciting space to watch, folks. Very exciting space to watch.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Tag Sustainability Talk podcast. And a special thank you to Cox Enterprises for allowing us to use their podcast studio. We hope you find our discussions both enlightening and inspiring. More information about becoming a member of the Technology Association of Georgia, Georgia's largest technology association, and to access exclusive content and events, please visit tagonline.org. While you're there, you can visit the Society's page and pick up a copy of the latest ecosystem report. If you'd like to get in touch with us or learn more about the Society, please reach out through the Tag Smart Communities and Sustainability Society page on LinkedIn. You can also now find the podcast on Spotify. Just search for Tag Sustainability Talk. Until next time, keep learning and pushing towards a more sustainable future.